Like the board is all here. Staff is present. Ms. Hewitt, you can turn on the recorder. Okay, Mr. Briggs, do you want to introduce this item?
Yes, item number five is on natural selection foods, San Benito County, consideration of adoption of administrative civil liability order, and the chair has an opening statement to read.
This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of a proposed administrative civil liability order against Natural Selections Foods, LLC, San Juan Bautista, San Benito County. The order of presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Witnesses called by prosecution staff. 2. Cross-examination of regional board prosecution staff witnesses by the discharger. 3. Witnesses called by the discharger. 4. Cross-examination of discharger's witnesses by regional board prosecution staff. 5. Representatives of agencies. 6. Other interested persons. And 7. excuse me. Summation or closing statements by the discharger and prosecution staff. As this is a prosecutorial action, we separate functions of staff so that the staff that are prosecuting this item don't have any communication with the board or board advisors. For this hearing, the prosecution team consists of staff engineer Matt Thompson and staff enforcement coordinator Harvey Packard under the direction of Assistant Executive Officer Michael Thomas, and they are represented by counsel Yvonne West from the Office of Enforcement of the State Water Resources Control Board. Neither counsel Lori Oken nor Executive Officer Roger Briggs have been advising the prosecution team in this matter. Ms. Oken and Mr. Briggs are advising the board in this case. Board members and staff counsel may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address, unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand now. Even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Packard.
Before Mr. Packard begins, logistic item, though. I have two cards here submitted for this item from Peter, is it Donlew? And Jan McClintock. So if you could fill out, and Mr. Robertson there has some blank cards, if the rest of you could go ahead and fill those out and hand them to John, we'd appreciate that.
What is our time allotment for this?
Thanks for mentioning that. I wanted to point that out, too. I believe in a transmission of your documents, your cover email mentioned 15 minutes for natural selections, and I don't know about the prosecution team.
Well, you gave us 20 in the hearing notice, so we're between about 15 and 20.
Okay.
So are we going to, is that 15 just for their case in chief, or are we going to divide that up, you know,
as far as cross-examination? That's a good question.
Okay.
Lori's looking at the notice.
The notice just says designated parties requesting more than 20 minutes for presentation should contact Roger Briggs. So it's up to the chair. We haven't established any time limits other than that.
We the prosecution team, aren't planning any cross-examination.
And nor are we.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, it's available if you change your mind. So 20 minutes, Mr.
Yes.
Thompson? Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt Thompson, Water Resource Control Engineer with Water Board Enforcement Unit. I'm presenting item number 5 in your agenda package, an administrative civil liability order for natural selection foods in San Benito County. I'm going to take about 15 minutes to describe the discharger and their violations. I'm going to summarize the factors the Water Board is required to consider when determining penalty amounts. And then I'm going to describe the discharger's proposed supplemental environmental project. And finally, I'll be recommending you adopt the administrative civil liability order. Natural Selection Foods owns and operates a vegetable processing facility located near the city of San Juan Bautista in San Benito County. Here's a map showing the location of the facility. Here is the 101 corridor. Here is the city of San Juan Bautista. And here is the Natural Selection Foods facility located about 2 miles north of the city of San Juan Bautista on the San Juan Highway. The discharger does business as Earthbound Farms, and according to its website, Earthbound Farms is the largest grower and shipper of organic produce in North America. The discharger generates processed wastewater by washing farm produce. Here's an aerial photo of the facility with the facility area highlighted in red. Here are the buildings where the produce is processed. Here is the storage pond where wastewater is stored. And here are the fields to which processed wastewater is disposed via spray irrigation. The blue line depicts San Juan Creek. This is the same creek to which the city of San Juan Bautista is permitted to discharge its treated wastewater. That's about, I think, 2 miles upstream of this facility. The San Benito River is approximately 1.5 miles downstream, and then the San Benito River flows for about a third of a mile before it reaches the Pajaro River. The San Benito and Pajaro Rivers support the threatened red-legged frog and the endangered steelhead trout. San Juan Creek itself is generally in poor condition. In some stretches, like just downstream of the facility, it resembles an ag drainage ditch. During the time of the violations I'm about to describe, the discharger was subject to Waste Discharge Requirements Order Number 9999.
Matt, I'm sorry, can I interrupt just a moment? Can you go back to that map?
Sure.
The disposal fields that you referred to there, are those the permitted fields, or are those the extent of fields being used currently?
I'll elaborate on that in a minute. I have another slide showing that. Again, the discharger was subject to Waste Discharge Requirements Order Number 9999, which this Water Board issued back in October 1999. However, at your last meeting in July, you rescinded Order 9999, and you enrolled the discharger under our general waste discharge requirements for discharges of fruit and vegetable processing waste. Order 9999 included the following requirements. First, prohibition number 3 says that discharge of any waste from the processed waste treatment system, including overflow, bypass, and seepage from transport, treatment, or disposal systems to adjacent drainage ways or adjacent properties is prohibited. Prohibition number 1 says that discharge to areas other than those designated in Attachment A is prohibited. And Attachment A of the order specifies the location of the 36-acre disposal field as on the east side of San Juan Highway, just south of the facility. I'll show you an aerial photo of that a little later. Discharge specification number 1 says that daily flow shall not exceed 70,000 gallons for process and stormwater discharges to the irrigation fields. And that 70,000 gallons per day number is based on the capacity of the 36-acre disposal field. Finally, provision number 5 of Order 9999 says that the discharger must submit a written report to the executive officer by April 22, 2004, addressing whether there are any changes to the discharge and whether there is any portion of Order 9999 that was incorrect, obsolete, or otherwise in need of revision. The discharger committed 5 violations of these requirements in the period from April 22, 2004 through November 1, 2006. First, violation number 1. The discharger failed to submit a written report required by provision number 5 by April 22, 2004. The discharger thereby violated provision number 5 and is liable civilly pursuant to California Water Code Section 13350. The requirement of provision number 5 was eventually replaced by the requirement to submit a notice of intent by January 31st, 2006 to be covered under the general WDRs that I mentioned earlier. For the purpose of enumerating penalties, the report required by provision number 5 was 649 days late. Violation number 2. On October 25th, 2005, Water Board staff sent a letter to the discharger requiring submittal of a notice of intent to be covered under the general waste discharge requirements by January 31st, 2006. That requirement was made pursuant to Water Code Sections 13260 and 13267. The discharger submitted its notice of intent on July 10th, 2006, which was 160 days late. The discharger is therefore liable civilly pursuant to California Water Code Sections 13261 and 13268. Violation number 3, the discharger's notice of intent revealed that the facility discharges an average of 274,000 gallons per day and a maximum of 582,000 gallons per day of processed wastewater, well in excess of its permitted flow limitation of 70,000 gallons per day. The discharger's self-monitoring report submitted in June and October 2006 further revealed that processed wastewater flow exceeds its flow limitation nearly every day of the processing season. These flow violations are listed on page 3 of my written report. In short, from April 2005 to September 2006, the discharged flow exceeded 70,000 gallons per day on 401 days. The discharger thereby violated discharge specification number 1 and is liable civilly pursuant to Water Code Section 13350. The discharger's recent enrollment under the general WDRs permits discharge of these higher flow volumes, so this violation has ended. Next slide, please, Harvey. Violation number 4. The discharger's notice of intent indicates that the facility was discharging processed wastewater to 78 acres, well in excess of the 36 acres permitted by Order 9999. The expanded disposal fields included approximately 42 acres on the west side of San Juan Highway. That's this. And note that it abuts San Juan Creek. The discharger thereby violated prohibition number 1 and is liable civilly pursuant to Water Code Section 13350. Assuming the discharger has only discharged to these expanded fields since signing the notice of intent, that's probably a conservative assumption. The discharger violated prohibition number 1 for 118 days, and that's for the period ending on November 1st, 2006. The discharger's recent enrollment under the general WDRs permits use of a larger disposal area, so this violation has too ended. And finally, violation number 5. You can go back, Harvey, please. Staff inspected the facility on October 4th, 2006, and found it discharging several thousand gallons of processed wastewater directly to the creek by runoff from the unauthorized disposal fields. In an October 9, 2006 letter, the discharger's consultant reported the discharge as 2 distinct spills of processed wastewater to the creek. The discharger's consultant estimated the first spill as 18,000 gallons and the second spill as 6,000 gallons. The discharger thereby violated prohibition number 3 and discharged waste illegally to surface waters of the United States and in violation of the Clean Water Act. Therefore, is liable civilly pursuant to California Water Code Sections 13350 and 13385. The maximum civil liability for the above violations is $6,240,000. This table shows how I calculated the maximum civil liability. Where the violation was ongoing, the number of days of violation is, that's this column here, that is based on the end date of November 1st, 2006. Now, Pursuant to Water Code Section 13.327, in determining the amount of liability for waste discharge requirements violations, the Water Board shall take into account the nature, circumstances, extent, and gravity of the violation, whether the discharge is susceptible to cleanup or abatement, the degree of toxicity of the discharge, and with respect to the violator, its ability to pay, the effect on ability to continue in business, any voluntary cleanup efforts undertaken, any prior history of violations, the degree of culpability, economic benefit or savings, if any, resulting from the violation, and other matters that justice may require. I discussed my consideration of all these factors in detail in my written report, so I'm only going to summarize my consideration of the factors here. First, regarding the nature of the violations, these failure to report violations are significant because we rely on such reports to determine the discharger's compliance with requirements. The flow violations are significant in that the discharger nearly quadrupled its discharge flow without our knowledge, authorization, or consent. The discharger nearly quadrupled its flow, yet only doubled its disposal area. This limited disposal area likely contributed to the spill violations. The expanded disposal area violations are significant in that the expanded areas abut the creek, whereas the original 36-acre disposal area was far removed from the creek. This greatly increases the likelihood that wastewater runoff will reach the creek. Had the discharger pursued approval, we would have required appropriate safeguards and monitoring to ensure the processed wastewater did not enter the creek. The spills to San Juan Creek are significant because the processed wastewater contained residual chlorine and high levels of BOD and suspended solids, which could harm aquatic life and degrade the receiving water. However, we did not observe any actual evidence of harm to aquatic life or degradation of the receiving water. Now, regarding degree of culpability, the discharger is highly culpable for all these violations. The discharger should have been aware of its requirements and pursued proper permission to expand wastewater flow rates and disposal fields. The system which led to the spills to San Juan Creek is completely within the control of the discharger. Regarding cleanup efforts, the discharger did not voluntarily clean up its spills, but the spills were not especially susceptible to cleanup or abatement. The spills entered the creek at a stretch that is heavily vegetated and not that accessible. The spills were likely flushed downstream by creek flow, and stopping creek flow to contain the spill was not practical. Next slide, please, Harvey. Regarding a degree of toxicity, the processed wastewater did contain chlorine prior to discharge to the spray fields, but the spills occurred in October during warm and dry weather. So it is likely that much of the residual chlorine volatilized before it reached the creek. We did not observe any evidence of fish kills or harm to aquatic life. We have therefore concluded the degree of toxicity to be low or moderate. Regarding compliance history, the discharge has likely exceeded 70,000 gallons per day, and the disposal area has exceeded the permitted 36 acres since the discharger expanded its facility in 2003. The discharger conceivably violated Order 9999 for 3 years. This is a poor compliance history. Regarding economic benefit, in my written report, I discuss in detail the economic benefit the discharger could have realized by not completing improvements necessary to comply with the general WDRs. Since issuance of the original complaint, the discharger has become enrolled under the general WDRs and has committed to approximately $2 million in improvements to its process wastewater management. These improvements really go above and beyond the general WDRs, and the discharger the discharger has not actually realized any economic benefit by submitting their notice of intent late. The discharger did realize a small economic benefit by failing to submit required reports, submitting reports late, not obtaining proper permission to expand its flow rate and disposal fields, and allowing the spray disposal fields to become hydraulically overloaded. I've conservatively estimated this benefit as only about $14,000. This amount is normally considered the minimum penalty amount. Regarding the discharger's ability to pay, it has reported annual sales of over $250 million, and I believe employs around 1,000 people. We believe the discharger is capable of paying the proposed penalty. Now, since the purpose of our enforcement action is to compel compliance with our requirements, I believe it is also important to consider the discharger's efforts to come into compliance. The discharger has made several improvements since discovery of its violations, which I've described in my written report, but for the sake of time, I'm going to have to rely on the discharger to elaborate on their compliance efforts. So, when setting proposed penalty amounts, we consider the required minimum and maximum penalty amounts as lower and upper bounds. Then we consider all of these factors, and we set the penalty at an amount that we believe is sufficient to bring the discharger back into compliance and to deter similar violations at similar facilities. In this case, we set the proposed penalty at $95,000. The assistant executive officer issued an administrative civil liability complaint on April 30th, 2007, and that complaint provided that the discharger may direct a portion of the penalty to a supplemental environmental project. So in response to the complaint, the – next slide, please, Harvey. The discharger waived its right to a hearing on May 10th, 2007. The discharger also proposed directing $50,000 to $80,000 of the penalty to the city of San Juan Bautista for its wastewater treatment plant effluent reclamation project. Now, the purpose of this supplemental environmental project is to recycle water from the city's wastewater treatment facility for irrigation of landscaping in the city of San Juan Bautista. There's a subdivision and a nearby cemetery that they can irrigate with the recycled water. The proposed SEP requires upgrading the city's existing disinfection process to Title 22 standards and installing pumps and piping to deliver recycled water to the use sites. The total cost of the SEP is estimated at around $94,000. The proposed SEP meets the requirements of the state's water quality enforcement policy. The SEP has a strong geographic nexus to the violations and will improve water quality by decreasing waste loading to San Juan Creek. Staff supports this proposed SEP. So today, we are asking you to adopt Administrative Civil Liability Order number R3-2007, number 76, in the amount of $95,000. The proposed order is in your written materials. And so in summary, the discharger must pay civil liability of $25,000 to State Board within 30 days. The discharger must also submit written proof of payment of at least $70,000 to the city of San Juan Bautista for its water recycling project within 60 days. The discharger must submit project progress reports, and the project must be completed by October 1st, 2009. If the final project cost is less than $70,000, the discharger must submit the difference to State Board. And also, to ensure the project is completed in a timely manner, the $70,000 must be forfeited to State Board if the project is not completed by October 2009. Based on our consideration of all these factors, the available evidence, and the discharger's good response since discovery of these violations, we believe the proposed $95,000 penalty is appropriate. The discharger has corrected the cause of these violations and is working towards a treatment system that will improve the discharge above and beyond requirements. The penalty amount should be sufficient to deter similar violations by similar facilities. The proposed order directs $70,000 to a supplemental environmental project that will further the goals of state laws and policies, and so I recommend adoption of the administrative civil liability order. Thanks.
Okay. I have two questions for you before we proceed to the next step. One is, what weight or consideration did you give, if any, to the nitrate groundwater contamination by the discharge in terms of computing your ACL amount?
Little. And that is because the groundwater monitoring information we have is from a monitoring well network that surrounds the wastewater storage pond. And you could argue that the groundwater down gradient of that storage pond is sort of representative of the whole spray disposal field area. But that would be a bit of a stretch because you're spreading that wastewater over a very large disposal area. We don't have groundwater monitoring well network for the spray disposal field area, so I'm very reluctant to say that the discharge has caused nitrate concentrations to increase in that larger area. It's probably more localized to the area around that wastewater storage pond.
Okay. And my second question is, why couldn't you consider the economic benefit to have been the cost of design and construction of a treatment process to reduce effluent nitrogen concentrations in the $300,000 to $1 million range?
Well, there are two ways to address the nitrogen loading. You can treat it to reduce it by half, or you can spread it out more. Natural Selection Foods has decided to do both. They are expanding the disposal area, and they are putting in a sequencing batch reactor plant to remove the nitrogen. So that's the $2 million they're spending.
Okay, and so why isn't that the economic benefit that they enjoyed by committing the violations they did?
Well, they would have only enjoyed it for about 160 days. No, wait. Yes, because their notice of intent to be covered under the general WDRs was 160 days late. So the argument would be that they would just have to comply with the general waste discharge requirements that much sooner.
Okay.
So the nitrogen removal requirements, that's from the general waste discharge requirements. That's not from Order 9999.
Okay. Any other board questions of staff? Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Matt. My concern is with violation number 5 and the conditions that surrounded the event of the spill and discharge to surface waters. And in that regard, I think the economic benefit and that one occasion would seem to me that you'd want to consider the inappropriate area that did not meet the need for the amount of flow, and that you would, if they had applied for permission to expand the disposal area as they would need to and as they're doing now, if they had done it then, they would have had safeguards because of the location they were asking for. They would have had to allocate a greater amount of acreage. I don't know if, you know, requiring either purchase of a parcel or taking crop area out of production. Why wouldn't we want to consider the economic benefit of not taking those steps at the appropriate time in order to avoid causing a spill in the way that it occurred? So that I'm thinking that the advantage of not having to foot the cost of expanding the disposal area and locating it in a more appropriate area, that economic gain had a one-time effect of creating a very serious spill and discharge. The fact that they're taking care of it now in terms of increasing the disposal area is a good thing, and we appreciate the cooperation at this point. But I think that violation number 5 occurred and is a very serious, had some very serious implications for threats to wildlife and to, in particular, and to threatened species, steelhead, and that concerns me greatly. So I'm questioning this minimal economic benefit of $14,000 when acquiring adequate space would have cost them something. I think your calculation in your report was something more like $1 million to $114
million. Well, two things there. The spills occurred because their disposal fields were hydraulically overloaded. Can you go to the slide showing the permitted and unpermitted? The way the discharger distributes process wastewater to the spray fields is with a, it's called a water reel irrigation system. And what it is just a big sprinkler gun that's on wheels, and they set it up here, and it just pulls slowly across the field. That's how they distribute the water. But in some of these sections, well, what we found in October 2006 is that that water reel irrigation system was broken. And so they instead had to use the more typical irrigation piping like you see all over the place. And I think because that irrigation, laying down that irrigation piping and rotating it is a lot more labor intensive, my argument is that the field would not have been hydraulically overloaded if the water reel irrigation system was operational. And so that's why I'm saying that it's only like $1,000 to fix the water reel irrigation system. I also have to disagree that the dischargers have serious implications for the receiving water. This is not an especially sensitive water body. It is not in good shape. And like I said, there's probably very little chlorine left in the, and that's really the only toxic in the water. It didn't have bacteria. It's not like a sewage spill.
Yeah, although I do believe in the report and staff report, it was noted that the reel system was never utilized in the unpermitted disposal field area, so the repair of the reel wouldn't have been a factor. They were using the piping system in the unpermitted disposal area all along. That's my take on your report.
Because of the shape, those are triangular parcels, and they couldn't get the reel system.
It's a comment from one of the operation managers in the staff report. So the reel system is not an issue for the unpermitted areas. It may have been for the permitted area.
No, the way that is that the majority of this area would have been they would have used the water reel irrigation system. The permanent use of irrigation piping was in these triangular sections. It couldn't use the water reel irrigation system because it had a spray radius of something like 200 feet, and it would have sprayed into the creek if they were to use them there. So the area where they used irrigation piping, and they could correct me if I'm wrong, but it's these like triangular sections right down by the creek.
Right, so the areas most likely to overload were those closest to the creek.
Correct.
Right. So, but I think what I'm getting at is the economic gain of utilizing that field, selecting that field, an inappropriate size, if they had come to the water board for permission to expand disposal fields, would you have permitted that location, and would you not have added conditions that would have cost them to operate in that location? And so my view of that is you would have probably given them several choices in order to mitigate what could be a potential impact to the creek. So I'm asking why the economic benefit is assessed at $14,000 when that particular incident that resulted in using an unpermitted area without any review resulted in exactly the kind of thing that we're trying to prevent.
Sure. I mean, they could have, another option would have been to have a larger disposal field.
Exactly.
I mean, they quadrupled their flow, so one would think that they would quadruple their disposal area.
Exactly, and that would have either
only
cost them funds to purchase
right.
additional fields or take crop area out of production, which
right.
would have cost some amount of money. And that's why I think the $14,000 seems really low to me. And really my only concern in looking at economic benefit is the conditions that occurred on the day of the spill.
Okay. Well, and again, they are purchasing, they are doing that. They are purchasing additional.
I understand that.
Okay. Can I address this briefly, too?
Yeah.
Under the enforcement policy, there's two kinds of economic benefit. There's delayed costs and avoided costs. So if you're looking at the cost of taking a crop out of production for a year in order to prevent the spill, that would have been an avoided cost, and that would be part of economic benefit. But when there's a delayed cost, like delaying the purchase of additional disposal area, that cost of acquiring the additional disposal area is not part of the economic benefit. What the economic benefit is the time value of buying the additional property this year instead of 2 years ago. Or if land values went down, I suppose you could consider that it, you know, there was some savings there.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you, for the sake of discussion, if they were to have purchased additional property earlier, say it cost $1 million for a large chunk of property, it would have been basically the cost of money for, say, 2 years at whatever percentage interest rate is. I mean, we haven't worked it out, but it'd be on the order of about $50,000.
Well, it would have been the cost of money. It also would have been the conditions that would have been imposed for monitoring, which are not small, mm-hmm. and for meeting other safeguards. And I just think $14,000 doesn't cover
sure. Well, the $14,000 does include the monitoring costs. So I think
so you're saying the monitoring that was issued, the monitoring conditions that were issued under 9999 would have been appropriate and adequate for whatever conditions you would have wanted to see in place for additional disposal, expanded disposal areas?
Yeah, I think the way to address that question would be to look at the differences in monitoring between what they're required to do now under the general waste discharge requirements and under Order 9999.
Which seems to me it would have changed. It would have likely changed.
Yeah, but
because
yeah.
It seems that the monitoring order really prioritized some of the other facilities and not necessarily looked at the processed wastewater as much.
Yeah, I mean, when the facility was originally permitted in 1999, it appeared to be focused on a mound disposal system that they had proposed for their domestic wastewater, and that the processed wastewater was sort of just included in the requirements. So.
Yeah.
Dr. Hunter, why don't we move along? We're going to get back to this and kind of decide what to do different, if anything. Any other board questions right now for staff? Mr. Hayashi?
You know, there's one thing that you keep making reference to, whether it's purchase of ground or whatever. You know, not everybody owns the ground. So if you're renting the ground, you have there's a significantly less cost factor involved. So I don't think that would be I don't think it would be a big factor, because it's not up to us to tell them how to secure the ground or where they need to secure. They need to secure it on their own. So I think Matt's on the right line.
Okay.
I have another question.
Mr. Briggs.
I may have missed it, but it seemed to me that the materials referred to the one inspection October 4th, 2006,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't see reference to other inspections. Was I missing something there?
Well,
it seemed like this was the first or the only inspection during the time period that we're looking at.
I don't know how many inspections occurred prior to October 2006. I inspected it on November 15th, 2006,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't find spills to the creek at that time. What I did find in this corner here, there was a lot of water ponded up there, but they were building up berms with tractors to prevent that water from reaching the creek. That's what I found in November 2006.
So the October 4th inspection was the, maybe it's safe to say, the first inspection in a long time?
Yes, I believe so.
And as far as the compliance history, this was the spills that were subsequently reported after being discovered are the only spills that have been reported as far as the materials that we have.
That's correct, right? We might have inspected it before, but we didn't find spills before.
Yeah, Cecile DiMartini with the permit staff. Actually, the facility was, just to clarify, the facility was inspected in May 2006. I don't remember the exact date, prior to the October 2006 date. And at that time, it was essentially just a facility and warehouse inspection, and any of the disposal fields was not walked through.
Thank you, Cecile. And just to add a little more insight, this is a seasonal facility. It operates between, I think, April and November, usually. Does that sound about right? And this field, it's really interesting. This is facilities manager Joe Torquato. And the way he explained it to me is this whole field, this is like pancake flat field. And there's hills here, and this is all flat. And there's really shallow groundwater here. And what happens is, how's it work? They switch what? Maybe you can explain how you get really shallow groundwater that causes a really, what happens is the groundwater level rises in the fall. I think it's because the farmers stop pumping and they start importing that blue valve water.
That's correct.
Is that right?
As the wells stop drawing in the local area, we tend
to well, Mr. Chair. Okay.
I'm explaining it, but the point I'm trying to make, Roger, is that the reason that we didn't see spills in May is because, one, they probably had just started processing, and two, the environmental conditions were such that you didn't have really high groundwater that could have resulted in the hydraulic overloading of the field.
I guess the point I was getting at is that the only day that spills have been reported for this facility, apparently in its history, is the one day that staff inspected the disposal field.
Correct.
And the spill was reported after the inspection.
Correct.
Thanks.
Okay. Does anyone from Natural Selections want to ask any cross-examination type questions of the prosecution team? Can you identify yourself?
Yes, I'm Joe Torquato. I'm the facilities engineer for Earth Natural Selections.
Okay.
And I don't think we need to ask any cross-examination questions. I think we just prefer to
okay.
share with you.
Well, it's your opportunity, and I just need to ask you if you want to ask staff any questions. You don't have to.
I think we're okay. I think
okay.
I will take an opportunity to address some of the concerns that you've
okay.
had.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead then and have you put on your presentation, and we'll give you time to do that. And you can split it up amongst however many people you want to. Doesn't matter.
Okay, great.
We'll just start the clock running.
My name is Pete Donlin with Natural Selection Foods. I currently am the Vice President of Business Development. Prior to that, was the Vice President of Operations. Charlie Sweat, our President, would be here today, but he had a prior commitment. We want to express that this process here today, as well as the program that Joe's going to present, is of the utmost importance to us at Natural Selection Foods. With me, you met Joe Torquato, our facility engineer, Julie Morris, our communications specialist, and we have Beatrice Mejia with Cooley Godward in San Francisco. And just wanted to start out by thanking you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon to show you the wastewater discharge program that we're putting in place. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Joe to walk through the program. Thank you.
Good afternoon. As I said, my name is Joe Torquato. I'm the facilities engineer for Natural Selections Foods. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share with you a little about who Natural Selections is and what we've been doing to continue to be an asset amongst our community, as well as remaining a viable organic business. I believe you'll see that our commitment to meet the requirements set by the regional board and staff have been well received within our company and excuse me, and met with a sound, multifaceted plan. The program we've outlined has six major components, and we feel it will allow you some insight into our efforts, both long and short term. Developing a viable long-term solution has driven the development and decision-making process as we've been through this. Throughout this process, we've worked to assure the solution has a long-term sustainability, and would like to assure the board that we have addressed these issues within every level of management within Natural Selections. We consider this a long-term commitment. We've given this a lot of thought and worked through this very diligently. Earthbound Farms Natural Selections has recruited individuals with expertise in water and process water management. We have made significant progress in upgrading and our discharge facilities. And once approvals are obtained, we're prepared to bring these plans to completion. We have looked at our process, and we've revamped existing processes or developed new ones, both in and outside our plant. This has been a great opportunity to allow management visibility of our water usage and the disposal demands. We have purchased equipment, and we've developed this equipment to reduce our water usage and allow visibility to the water usage in and around our facility. And as a cornerstone to this process, in areas that we didn't have staff expertise, we have secured experts in a specific field. And lastly, Natural Selections has committed over $2 million in investments for both facility mods and equipment to assure a long-term solution to our water discharge needs. And please understand, this was done well before any contact with the Regional Water Board, and I'll give you some history of how that timeline has transpired. We believe people make a plan. As I mentioned, my name is Joe Torquato. I was asked to join the Natural Selections team 2 years ago. I have 20 years' experience in the food processing and facilities engineering. I've designed and constructed numerous plants across the country, and all of these process plants have had water discharge and development needs. We've hired a facility manager, a dedicated facility manager. His name is Richard Paulus, formerly with Lee & Associates. That's a firm that specializes in mechanical engineering locally. Richard has 15 years' experience in process engineering field. He has been deeply involved with the design of projects of this nature. We have dedicated a full-time field employee to manage the irrigation and water discharge. That's something new to our plan. This employee is trained in our process and manages field preparation, crop planning, field inspections, water application, and the mowing of our fields. And we have trained our facilities team to be fully aware of water usage and the discharge systems and the management of those systems. Our facilities team today consists of four individuals. They each have specific areas of expertise, but all have been trained in our process and the requirements of our process. We have invested in our facility, and we have rebuilt and lined the existing holding ponds to reduce groundwater impact. This has been developed to later serve as holding and staging for a planned SBR treatment facility that we intend to build, also a requirement of the newly adopted discharge permit. Prior to lining these ponds, They were one single large earthen-lined retention pond, and actually the location of the original permitted mound system that is addressed in permit number 9999. We set aside approximately 10 acres to permit overflow. We'll talk about that a little more. But this is adjacent to the creek and intended to create a buffer area allowing response time in the event of a future spill. We proposed and designed an SBR pretreatment facility capable of tertiary treatment and Title 22 water. This will be designed and has been designed for a peak 24-hour flow and will allow us water reuse opportunity. It's currently in the permit process and pending county use permit approval. We've regraded and furrowed our spray fields. We've laser planed these spray fields and furrowed them perpendicular to the grade and parallel to the creek. This is a new process for us, and we have found it's been very effective. We have modified our planting schedule and seed varieties to maximize water removal and evaporation. Our past practice was to simply use plants that were not as adversely affected by water. We have now found grasses that have additional surface area, allowing greater evaporation opportunity. We have created protection berms along the entire creekway to protect against future accidental spills. This, in fact, is the area that Matt was talking about that we the one spill occurred in. So you can see the protection berm to the left and then the creek to the right. We have secured a lease that will provide short-term additional spray field area and eventually rapid infiltration percolation ponds. This is part of our overall plan to deal with our water discharge. This is an additional 18 acres of sandy marginal land that will reduce short-term loading on the existing spray fields. The San Benito County Water District and the San Benito County Planning Department have reviewed this location and feel it's a viable location for rapid infiltration ponds. This was included as part of our NOI submitted to the board. And we've constructed a water transport line to allow water distribution to the newly acquired spray field. This consists of two completely welded 6-inch poly lines, one serving as a backup. This is a map of our facility and, frankly, the way we run our irrigation patterns. The green area right in here and right up in here is areas that we have set aside as buffer areas. And the areas right along this creek right here are the areas that we have created a protection berm. And it's just a raised earthen berm that just gives us time and it gives us a little bit of latitude if there's a problem. And we'll talk about some of the specifics of the problems, you know, if there are any. I'm sorry?
I'm assuming you lasered the ground on the buffer.
Yes, we have. We've lasered the entire field today. And again, the reason we're changing our furrow directions is to give us cavities to catch water in case there ever was a spill or an overhead saturation of water. So it basically gives us pools to catch before there's ever a problem. And we'll get into some of our inspections. I'll touch on those. We have looked at our processes. That's been a very big focal point, and we've implemented an irrigation plan that tracks the exact acreage and gallons of water used each day. Our irrigation plan has predetermined locations for the water irrigation gun. You saw that on the previous map. It has a preset retract speed, and we target less than 1 inch of water per acre per week. We perform daily field inspections to assure suitable field conditions. We have developed a field inspection document that identifies issues present in the field, such as standing water, wet soil, high grass, smell, or any irregularities that might exist. These are reviewed by the facilities manager and staff. We have reviewed the daily usage and discharge reports. These reports are reviewed daily by myself and the entire management staff at Natural Selections. Discharge targets and water usage are held to predetermined quantity within the newly adopted permit limits. No exceptions at the facility are permitted. Shutdown of the production has been authorized if any of these thresholds are exceeded. And we perform weekly monitoring and reporting. Senior management reviews these reports weekly, and the results of these reports are discussed at our weekly ops meeting. This is being held very closely to us, and it's getting a lot of focus in our company, as should it. We have developed a process improvement plan that manages our water usage, establishes corrective actions, and ensures that we are in compliance. This is a similar process that we use in all major company initiatives. It has been proven to be an effective tool to create accountability and promote solutions. And we mow our fields regularly to assure that they can be visually inspected and encourage efficient evaporation. We utilize field mapping and discharge tracking that identifies location of water application and the quantity on irrigation fields. This predetermined map assures water is applied only when scheduled. The plan is reviewed by the operational staff and the facilities manager. And we're actively working to secure secondary users of treated reclaimed water, including McAlpine Lake, Stevens Creek Quarry, and Natural Selection's on-site landscaping. Numerous other parties have expressed interest in this water once Title 22 quality is available. The reclamation uses also include our own condensing towers. We're currently forced to discharge approximately 30,000 gallons a day from our own towers. This can be secondary use water, and providing a net reduction of the same quantity. We've invested in equipment at Natural Selections. We've installed flow meters to monitor all points of use. This allows visibility to these points of use, and it promotes accountability within our own company departments at Natural Selections Foods. We've implemented the use of a water irrigation gun in conjunction with conventional irrigation pipe. This is our preferred application device. It has a predetermined retract rate and fixed application quantity. It extends 900 feet without joints as the standard irrigation pipe. And we've developed filter technology unique to the industry, frankly, that will reduce our water usage by 25%. These systems will filter out and remove fine dirt and silt from our processed water stream, allowing us to extend the useful cycles of our water within our plant. This is our spray field adjacent to the plant and the water gun running in the background. So you can see we've furrowed our fields, we grow low grass on them, and we irrigate with the gun on most occasions, and on some, and we do use this in conjunction with standard irrigation pipe, which has been our practice since the inception of our original permit. As a cornerstone to our process, we have secured contract resources of Bracewell Engineering to ensure that requirements are met for the wash water treatment and disposal. His firm has greatly enhanced our compliance efforts and assisted us in developing a process that manages our discharge needs. And we've retained Earth Systems to establish and install ground monitoring wells. And this is as required by our new general discharge requirements and scheduled to complete by the end of August. And this will give you some data of the local groundwater that you're asking about. Lastly, as you can see, we have made significant capital investment both in facilities and personnel.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
On that last slide.
Sure, let me back up. The blank one?
No, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, what is it? No. what are the dates of some of these things? I mean, is this over a period of 10 years, or is this since last week, or what?
No.
Who are we looking at?
So I've been with the company for 2 years. When I joined Natural Selections Foods, we had on my desk, once I found it, we had a requirement to provide a notice of intent. Since that day, we have been working towards this solution, coming up with a viable long-term solution. The pretreatment facility, we have invested today $400,000 between development of pipelines and infrastructure and engineering, and we have got the money allocated. In fact, we'd like to get it spending to complete by the end of this year.
No, I'm trying to get an idea of when all this stuff started.
I would say in the last 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, in the last 2 years.
This has been going. Yeah, that answers my question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we had the blank one. Apologize. Although we don't think these matters are linked in any way, we wanted to give you an update on the 2006 E. coli issue, as the inspection that occurred happened at that same time. And although the exact nature of the contamination was never identified, investigators found the same 0157H7 strain on a ranch 40 miles from our facility. The sample was found 1 mile from a field where spinach was grown. Extensive environmental tests by the CDHS and the FDA were performed on our facility, equipment, and buildings at San Juan Bautista. They showed no evidence of any contamination. And none of our processed discharge waters comes in any contact with crops grown for human consumption. Okay. It's meant to be a brief update, so I hope that helps you a little bit.
But some of your product did have E. coli in it, in the bags of spinach.
We were part of that. We actually promoted the recall, and it wasn't at this facility. It was at one of our adjacent facilities at the time.
But some of your product did test positive for E. coli?
That is correct.
Okay.
As you can see, we've made significant progress as it relates to our discharge needs and requirements. Many interested local users have expressed interest in our treated water, and we're excited about these opportunities. We intend to include the board and the board staff as we follow up on them in the future. We have proposed a supplemental environmental project that will allow the city of San Juan Bautista to develop a reclamation plan of their own. This plan can be implemented in short time and yield great benefits to the local community. It's our mission to be a catalyst for positive change. We believe this speaks to that goal and hope the board appreciates that we take this very seriously as a company. We're not contesting the enforcement action before you today, but feel it's valuable for the board to see that measures have been taken to assure we remain in compliance in the future. It's our desire to move forward with better facilities, trained staffing, and more direct focus. Thank you. And I will take some questions if you have some.
Okay. Any board questions? Okay.
I had a question.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
I just want to be clear. The information we have in front of us regards the way in which you have taken action since 2004. Mm-hmm. And I see that you've added personnel. And I think the figure there I saw was 360,000 mm-hmm. invested in personnel and building expertise. Is that over since 2004? So that's the total amount you would assigned to that?
That is since then, correct.
Component.
And that includes securing leases and budgeting for bringing specific irrigation people on and expertise, right?
So prior to 2004, how would you characterize the expertise of the staff and the ability to manage the disposal and water, process water?
I think our focus today is better. Obviously better. I think we're doing a very good job today. I wasn't there, so I couldn't speak to what they were before that time period.
And you also mentioned that when you came on board, you discovered the request for the NOI
mm-hmm.
on your desk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was carried a due date of January 06, and I note in the report it was submitted in July.
Yes. One thing that I think it's important for you to be aware of, in November of 2005, I contacted the local staff at the regional board and had communications. In fact, those communications went through with Mrs. DeMartini from November through the date that the notice of intent was in fact, two of them were actually submitted. One of them and was understood by the staff that it would be a precursor, that we were going to follow up when our plan was fully developed, and we did that then in July. So there was actually a submission that was a precursor to give the board, to give the staff some idea of where we were going in the development of that plan and to give them input into that plan. So conversations were taking place from November, and so I hope that helps.
Yeah, it does. I'm just trying to ascertain the level of awareness of the permitting conditions that were in place when you came on board. During that time, you were seeing the expansion of your operations, including increased flow and increased and disposal area.
Right.
And did you have any awareness of the 99-99 conditions in terms of those constraints?
That's an interesting question, and I'll address it. It may be a little lengthy, so bear with me a little bit. In 2000, first of all, when the permit was issued, it was issued around a pond system. It was originally developed to manage our sanitary sewer waste.
Right.
That system was never built. An alternative was put before a number of the community groups, and a direct connection between the City of San Juan and our facility had taken place. As you probably read in some of the documents that I had sent in, the staff at the time, Mr. Bob Wright at the time, felt that the permit that was originally issued did not have further commitment. Okay. So what they did understand at the time, what we understood as a company at the time, is that we had a commitment to report to the county. We diligently and dutifully reported to the county bi-yearly. So that process took place. The notice of intent was really the first indicator that I could see and derive that said we need to do something. You know what I'm saying? And at that point, I was directed by my senior management to certainly address the issues to the fullest extent that we were able to. Mm-hmm. And that just, it took some time to put a plan together. But that time was communicated.
Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that? Mm-hmm. How do you know that that's what Robert Wright thought at that time?
In reading his reports, in fact, he states that in the report to the board back in 2000. That's the only reason I know that. Mm-hmm. That he was filing this as a requirement of the permit, but didn't intend to further pursue it because of this mound system was never going to be built. So, I mean,
do we have a copy of that? We do.
Who did he report to, by the way? Mr. Wright, who did he report to? To you.
Mr. Pete Donlin.
Attachment number three in the prosecution's additional documents.
Oh.
Doesn't deem as good over there, but...
We can put it up on the screen, or we can...
That's not in the staff report.
No, it's not the staff report. It's the additional documents that were submitted along with the staff report.
Do you have a copy on your laptop that you can show?
Yes.
While we're on that subject, I also, when we're going to look at this document, I just want to point out that document does state that they would continually report to the regional board on some of the monitoring report that did not take place.
I think some of the unclarity of possibly on our part whether or not we were under obligation once this mound system was no longer going to be built. The intent was to monitor, and the best I can derive from it, the intent was to monitor the human waste portion of it, not necessarily the industrial waste portion.
But you are aware, or you became aware at some point, that the constraint on flow,
yes,
and the size of the disposal,
yes,
fields was
absolutely
clearly defined,
absolutely,
in that original permit.
Certainly clearly defined as it relates to that permit. Like I said, I think there was probably a communication gap and possibly some misunderstandings on our part of what those requirements were. Amongst our staff and the obligations therein.
Mm-hmm.
That reporting continued to go on at the county level, and the county continued to support us through additional expansions through the process.
But when did you first become aware that there were limitations in the permit as applied towards the process water?
Well, I mean, once I received the notice of intent and started reviewing all the documents and trying to gather, and trying to build a history, if you would, you can see that there could be certainly some issues with our further discharge. So back in, I want to say my awareness became back in November of 2005 that certainly has some question.
Did you bring those concerns up to regional board staff?
Regional board staff and I certainly had those conversations. Mrs. DeMartini and I talked about the amount of discharge. In fact, she brought it to my attention.
She brought it to your attention. Do you know when that took place?
No. It must have been her inspection visit. And she said May of 2006. Yeah. That there was clearly a connection between.
So between November and then May, you were reviewing the permit.
We were reviewing the permit and really reviewing a plan to deal with our water.
Right.
So, yeah.
But as you went through the permit and saw there were constraints as to the use of processed water.
Right.
What did you do on your own to contact Water Board staff or anyone else from Natural Selections to try to get it clarified?
Well, as I stated, the intent of my conversation with the Water Board staff was, in fact, the conversation went around the excess use of water and some of the reclamation plans we were putting in place to reduce that usage. I think there was I feel like there was a very good understanding that, you know, there was an excess amount of water being discharged, and the plan was being put in place to deal with that.
Did you realize that your company was subject to penalties at that point for those exceedances?
You know what, my focus at the time was certainly not around penalties. It was certainly around coming up with a plan that was sustainable.
Okay.
And that's what I put my focus into.
Okay.
All right. Can we look at this document now? Can you scroll up to the top of it?
Sure.
So who's this to? Yeah.
Now, what this is a monitoring report from Natural Selection Foods from October 2000. And the reason that we included this is because we believe it demonstrates that Natural Selection Foods understood that there were monitoring requirements.
Is this the document that the gentleman was referring to? I thought that was a document from Mr. Wright, an internal document.
I believe this is the document they were referring to. It is it's a report from Mr. Wright to the regional board.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay, go ahead. So it's really hard to read from here. Can you sort of... There we go.
Basically, I'll walk through this. It says, you know, water supply monitoring. This is basically mirroring their monitoring and reporting program. They acknowledge that they have some water supply monitoring, some effluent monitoring, and you can see here they're talking about sewage. There's apparently some confusion. They say that they're discharging to the city of San Juan Bautista, and that they're down here, they say, look, the mound system is obsolete, so this disposal area monitoring is not applicable. But I think in general, the letter, the monitoring report demonstrates that they were aware of their monitoring.
That they certainly had it at the time. Yeah, I mean, there's no question we certainly had it at the time, which is why this was submitted to the staff. That's correct.
So there's nowhere in there that says we don't need to do any more monitoring reports.
No, what it's saying is it what we were monitoring, it was not applicable.
Right, but there's no one there that says we don't need to do any more reporting. Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other board questions at this point in time? Mr. Briggs.
Basically a follow-up to the question that I asked Mr. Thompson before about the coincidence of the one inspection in a long time as far as the disposal fields go. And it was the staff that pointed out to you that you're having a spill. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what their explanation is for that coincidence.
Well, understand the nature of the spill. Our standard practice since 1999 was certainly to use irrigation pipe, typical irrigation pipe, for this distribution of water. The spill that occurred, two incidences, and I'll explain to both of them to you. The first one was simply a hydrant that wasn't placed correctly. The fact that it made it to the creekway is really a coincidence. The fact is, before that field was laser planed, it had a low-lying area. And so a hydrant wasn't connected. The staff member went to lunch, and it was you could see it in the field. Understand what the circumstances around that. There was a lot of confusion. We had a lot of very ugly things going on that day, which was a significant distraction. We had the FBI showing up at our plant, and everyone was, frankly, in a tizzy. So there was a distraction, and so it's hard to go back at staff and hold them totally accountable at that point because there was so much going on. But the nature of it was simply an irrigation pipe, and it just happened to be in the bad proximity to the river. That could have happened in anywhere else in any of the spray fields, and it would have never been a spill. Okay. The second area. Was a hole in an irrigation pipe. It was a split pipe. It was near the creekway. It wasn't something blatant, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't some blatant discharge. It was simply an irrigation pipe that had split, and it had saturated ground. It wasn't our practice to mow our fields at the time. And the low-lying area carried the water towards the creek, and then the irrigation group moved the pipe on top of what had already been wet by this leak. And therefore oversaturated the soil. So it's kind of a unique situation in itself. The fact that it was in close proximity, there was a hole in the pipe, pretty unusual. But
so part of the reason you had a spill is because the FBI showed up.
I'm just saying it was a distraction. It was certainly a distraction. So one of the reasons in prior to this inspection that we had purchased and started the use of a water sprinkler reel is because we recognized it moves easier, it allows us to mow our fields, it allows us greater mobility of the system. So that system was implemented for that purpose and certainly before any inspection.
Mr. Hayashi, any questions, comments?
But I'm assuming you're pretty confident now that if anything were to happen similar to that again, the berms and the laser planing and the furrowing would take care of any problem.
Like I said, I feel like we have a very solid, multifaceted plan.
Well, that's not what I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm confident. I'm confident with the level of personnel that we've brought on staff and those components. We are well protected against a future incident.
Yes, I agree. I agree that there is redundancy and it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Thank you very much. You do have a little over four minutes left, should you want to use it. Next item would be cross-examination of discharger's witnesses by regional board prosecution staff. Any questions? Any cross-examination, Mr. Thompson?
No.
Okay. We'll then go on to representatives of agencies. And I do have a card from Jan McClintock with the City of San Juan Bautista.
Hello, Board. I just wanted to let you know, I believe you have a letter from the city discussing the importance of the tertiary treatment opportunity that the redirection of the funds to an SEP would generate for the city, and we do feel it is an important project. It will make us about 5 years ahead of when we could have implemented this, so we are here in support of that SEP. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay. Any questions from the board? All right. Thank you very much. We'll go on to other interested persons, which then means everyone else who has given us a card, correct?
Yeah, if there is anyone else.
Well, let's see. Beatrice Mejia.
I am Beatrice Mejia from Holy God Word Cronish, an attorney for the company. I have no comments.
Okay. All right. Peter.
Already heard from him.
We heard from him. Okay. Julie Morris, I do not wish to testify. You're just here. Okay. It says Stan Pura. Did we It says, I wish to testify. Go ahead.
My name is Stan Pure. I'm one of the partners in Earthbound Farms. And I just wanted to give you a little brief history on what I feel, you know, the core of our business is. And, you know, we got involved in organic farming here about 10 years ago. And, you know, our main focus is to be a minimal impact on our environment around us. You know, we've transitioned close to 30,000 acres from conventional agriculture into organics. We feel by doing that, you know, we've helped to preserve the quality of water in every area that we farm. We've gotten away from commercial fertilizers using organic inputs. We feel we've lowered nitrate levels that have potential of reaching groundwater in a lot of different areas. I have no excuses for some of the violations before us, but I just wanted to mention that, you know, the core principles of our company are to be environmentally friendly, both in our farming practices and the inputs that we use. We use a lot of recycled material to fertilize our crops. You know, we've gotten involved in biodiesel production, and we look forward to working with San Benito in the future of recycled water. We farm about 3,000 acres in San Benito County, and we are very dependent on CVP water. And, you know, we've recently engaged a consultant, Steve Collins, to do some work for us in trying to duplicate what the Castrol Project has done, and look forward to being able to recycle a lot of this water that, you know, seems like is a lot of issues around San Benito County. Thank you.
How much more acreage can be converted to organic farming? It's a side question.
What's that?
What's your prediction or forecast for how much more acreage can be converted from traditional farming into organic farming?
Well, I think we underestimated how successful our products were going to be, you know, and I think our volume grew faster than we, you know, and ever imagined. So I think, you know, I think consumers will dictate, you know, this. You know, I think the category is being driven by consumers, and we'll just have to respond to that.
Is it increasing every year?
Oh, definitely.
It is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Last card. Well, I do not wish to speak. That's Mr. Bracewell. You can come up. You can speak if you want.
Lloyd Bracewell, Bracewell Engineering. I'm a consultant for Natural Selection Foods. I just wanted to comment on the nitrate issue. We do the monitoring for the system in the last few years, and we collect the data. There really is very little nitrogen data on their wash water, but I can give you the data that does exist. Last year, there were two samples collected. One was 10, and one was 40 or 45. This year, both samples were less than 3. So I don't think they are a high nitrate discharger, but we only have the 4 data points. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
That's reported as what?
As N.
Okay.
Okay. Any other board questions at this time of any witnesses? All right. We can move on to summation.
Is there another point where we close, or is this it for us?
This is it.
This is it. Okay, we just have a few brief remarks. I think it's important to note that natural selection isn't arguing about any of the violations technically, so I don't think that really is a big question for the board today. The main question, I think, is the appropriate amount of the penalty. I agree with Dr. Hunter that it probably would have been possible to do a more detailed analysis of economic benefit, and maybe the numbers would have come up a little bit different. You can see that the proposed amount of the penalty, $95,000, is over 6 times the amount of economic benefit that we did calculate. So there is some buffer there. We considered also in that the environmental damage that we could prove was caused by the spill and the cooperation of the discharger that we've seen in these past months. And that's the factors that we took into account in establishing that penalty. We recommend that the board adopt the order as written.
Okay. And anybody from Natural Selections? You've got time to go ahead and give us okay. a summation.
I just want to thank the board and, again, assure you that I feel like going forward we have a very solid plan. We have put a lot of focus in our company on it. Our senior management seriously is involved in this on a daily basis. So I think there can be some confidence in knowing that I think that we have a fairly good grip on this and that I think there can be some really positive things coming from our company in the future. So, okay?
Okay. Thank you. All right. Lori, that closes the evidentiary portion
Correct.
Of the hearing. So we can now go to board deliberation.
Right.
Okay.
Are we going to hear anything more about the SEP, or is that separate?
If you want to hear anything more about it, you have to hear it now.
Just ask questions.
We'd have to hear it now? Okay. I mean, because no one reported on it.
We had some comments on it.
Yeah, okay.
If you have questions, I think there's people here from the city. There's a description of it in the staff report.
I read that. Well, actually, I think maybe just a quick couple of questions on, I mean, I think it's a great project and all that. I don't have any problem with that. On what's appropriate for a SEP. And there was, I was just wondering if the recipient of the SEP money, it seemed to me, I don't know if this is a requirement of the city to build this or if it's just something they're doing.
I don't know if it's a requirement of the city either, but it's not a requirement of the discharger.
And that's what's, okay.
Right.
And then there was a statement by the city, I think it was, that this was going to save ratepayers money. I almost wish I hadn't read that because that makes me think we're just giving this money so that ratepayers don't have to pay something maybe they should be paying. I don't know.
What we're saying is for the cemetery district, the rates for tertiary water would be a lower rate than the rates for primary water. Now, that savings is probably only going to be 10 to 15%, but for something like a cemetery district, which is a public district, that can be substantial.
Okay, I understand now. Thanks. That was the clarification I needed. Okay, that was it. Thanks.
Just a follow-up question to the city of San Juan Bautista. Since you're getting $70,000, if this is approved, is this going to be enough money to complete the project?
There are different steps in the project, and we can definitely get it up and running. What we probably cannot do for $70,000 is build retention containers to make sure that we have it at a constant supply. We will be able to provide it as it's available, but we might not be able to provide it on a 24/7 until a later time when we can add reservoirs, essentially tertiary reservoirs. But for $70,000, we can get it up and running. We just won't have the reservoirs.
Won't have the reservoirs. So the total project would not be completed with this amount of money?
We would be able to service tertiary, except for in the extreme heat of the summer, we might not be able to service everything that the cemetery district would need, in which case we would augment that tertiary with primary water, potable water. So once we get to the point where we can then have enough in our capital investment program to add the reservoirs, then we'd be able to provide it on a 24/7, 365
When is that
basis.
Anticipated?
That's probably about 5 years away if we have to do that. Otherwise, we'll be searching for grant monies like everybody else to try and augment.
So there's no guarantee in 5 years that would be completed?
No, we feel that with our capital investment program, we could probably have those reservoirs built within 5 years.
And those that capital fund is coming from where?
Ratepayers.
The ratepayers. Okay.
Now, if we find a grant, obviously we'll build it quicker.
Okay.
Because it is a high priority.
Sure.
Thank you. I just want you to understand why we elected to promote this with this fine money. As you all know, we have high groundwater conditions within our area in our end of the valley in San Benito County. We really feel like the less importation we need to do of water is going to benefit the overall overburden water that we're seeing, even on our own site. So that's why this project really has a good basis and has great impact on the local area.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Hodgen.
Can I surmise then that you are not protesting the suggested fine or recommending a different number?
That is accurate.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Briggs, any recommendations or thoughts?
First of all, I think there are a couple of minor errors in the order on page 2, where it's right in the middle of the page. It's quoting provision number 5. And since it is a quote, it doesn't line up exactly. There are two extra words in there. The second line, it says assistant. That should be deleted. And the third line, it says, at the end of the line, it says any changes. Any should be deleted. Minor detail. As far as a recommendation for the board, I think the staff recommendation that we've heard is in the ballpark. I've kind of gone back and forth on this as I read the initial materials and then read the discharger's response, and then of course what we've heard here today. I bounced around a little bit in my own mind, but it's pretty, and you could probably tell by my questions, it's pretty troubling to me that they had the higher flows for such a long period of time, and yet the only spill that they reported was one that was pointed out by us in our inspection. Now, that doesn't mean that there were other spills, and there's no evidence that there were other spills, but I think it does go to the circumstances and the gravity, in that self-reporting is a cornerstone of our self-monitoring program that we have to employ. And it's not self-reporting when one of our employees has to drive 150 miles or whatever it was to point out a spill that's happening on their own property. So I think that increases the gravity and perhaps the culpability factor some in my mind. We talked a little bit about the economic savings. If you looked at 1.1 million for, it was 0.44 years. Mr. Thompson mentioned 160 days. If you assume 5%, that would give you $24,000. If you use the $2.4 million capital expense, that would be about $50,000. If you add that with the $14,000 that the staff already calculated, those two figures are $38,000 and $64,000, respectively, as far as economic savings. That's not saying anything about some of the factors that Dr. Hunter was talking about, some of the other potential economic savings factors. And while Mr. Packard said that the $95,000 proposed figure does provide some buffer, the idea of the penalty is not just to cover the economic savings. So it seems to me that that would tend to say maybe we should increase that buffer. Mr. Thompson talked about the very conservative assumptions that were made as far as calculating the days of violation. So the total potential liability figure is probably a very conservatively low figure, and it seems like a very low percentage, again, considering the circumstances of the spill, for example. So I think it should be a little higher. I think probably the eight of you could come up with eight different figures, but I think it should be increased a little bit, and I'll throw out a $120,000 figure with the two corrections for the ACL order.
Okay. Well, any thoughts from the board as to what we should do? We have a staff
I do. I have a thought.
Okay.
You know, an irrigation system could work flawlessly for 100 years out there. And, you know, to have an aluminum pipe spring a leak is not an everyday occurrence. I mean, it happens. And it just so happened this time. You know, I can't see that, you know, we can't assume that more spills occurred than that were reported. We have to go on what was reported. I mean, there's no evidence out there. So I think, based on everything that I've heard today, I would move to adopt it with the two word changes and with the penalty at the $95,000.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Shallcross?
Yeah, I sort of went back and forth on this too. When I first read the staff report at the last meeting, I thought to myself, well, boy, were these guys smart for taking the deal. Man, I'd have taken it in a minute, because if you just looked at the staff report, it looked like a pretty horrible violation, and this wasn't the kind of violation I like to see people get away with something under, you know, well under 10% of the maximum, because a lot of times, we, you know, 10% of the maximum is sort of a what a lot of folks get who aren't even that bad. So, and some other people had some other board members had some concerns about the amount too, because it did look like such an egregious situation. And I'm really glad we held the hearing and listen to you folks. You're obviously the good kid who got caught in a situation, some of it of your own making, and maybe made some bad decisions. But you're obviously a good player on the block and concerned about water quality. I'm glad to see that you're doing the right thing and you're putting a lot of resources into it. I really appreciate that. On the other hand, I still think the violations were pretty bad. When you look at the how long some of these violations went on, and the other thing that especially bothers me is not reporting to the board the changes in your increased water wastewater.
Processed water.
Location.
Yeah,
that
and volume.
That to me seemed even worse than in a way even than the spill, and certainly worse than the reporting violations. But having said that, and having heard you guys, now I'm back to, you know, gee, the kids are okay, you know. So I think the staff report is probably fair. I could easily go higher on this. It wouldn't take much at all, but I think the $95,000 is fair, and I know, you know, you're not going to be back here like this, so you know, that goes a long way. You know, if we see folks who we think are just shining us on or are doing the minimum, that makes a big difference. But you folks obviously have been trying to do the right thing all along, and so I'll go with the staff report.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries.
Well, I felt same as Mr. Shallcross after reading the staff's report and the amount of violations of the days that these violations happened, that the fine wasn't sufficient. And as past practices, that, you know, just kind of, I didn't pick a number out of thin air, but I kind of came up with, I thought an appropriate fine would be $150,000 for the total amount. I just thought the $90,000 was a little bit low for the amount of violations and the type of violations. And sure enough, you know, you could have, who knows whether you've had more than one spill or not, because we have no proof one way or the other. But on the other hand, I kind of thought when I was reading some of this information is some people have the theory, well, we'll just go ahead and do this, and if we get caught, then we'll ask for forgiveness. And a lot of businesses do that. They don't want to go through the bureaucratic process to make changes. And it's kind of hard to weigh all these issues that were brought. And I must commend you what you're trying to do in the future and what you've already started to do. And I hope it's all completed in a short period of time. San Juan Basin is a very sensitive basin. There's a lot of problems with the water quality in that particular area. Any part that's added to it just compounds the problems, and any spills that we've had to that particular area just makes it a lot worse than what it actually is. So I kind of hesitated on what I should think about, and I've kind of flip-flopped like the rest of us have as we've heard the testimony. But then I go back to what I was reading a few days ago, and I came back with the same thing, and then Mr. Briggs kind of came up with a different number, and I thought, well, that's a good compromise to the number I was thinking about, $150,000. So I would rather, and I will compromise if the rest of the board wants to do that, to the $120,000. Was it $120,000 or $125,000?
$120,000.
I think that's a compromise that I could reach in my own mind and still be satisfied. And I want you to know, because I'm from Salinas, that I've had a lot of constituents asking, you know, this has been a water quality issue. Why hasn't your board done something? And I was one of the board members that, I wouldn't say insisted, but asked to have this brought forward to the full board for us to hear this. Not to crucify you or try to hold you up, but I think there needed to be an answer to the public for the situation that has happened. And not addressing the E. coli issue, that's a different issue. But the issue of the violation of the spray fields, 401 days, that just blew me away, plus the other things. So that's my position. I could go with the executive officer's $120,000.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. I also want to say I'm really glad to hear that the plan to change the practices and improve the management and to better understand the water disposal, water quality and disposal issues, it's clear, you know, that you're making that investment and making changes so that we understand that this is, it's very unlikely that we'll see this kind of violation going on again. But I also asked for this item to be brought to a hearing before the board because I was very concerned with the length of time that these issues went on. And understanding that Earthbound Farms is highly respected and considered to be a leader in the ag community and organic farming, it was really distressing to me to see the situation that had gone on for a very long time with folks who are working in the context of California farming. I mean, regional board is a big factor in the way that farm practices occur these days, and especially considering that the Ag Waiver Discharge Program was under such scrutiny at the time. I think not being aware that you had a disposal and a flow constraints and a permit attached to that just seemed very unlikely that no one in your operation would be aware that you had, if you were making changes, especially at that magnitude, increasing flow by four times, only increasing disposal area by double that factor when it clearly should have been greater than that, and allocating or designating disposal to areas close to creeks where the likelihood of a problem could lead to a spill. Those are all things that I would expect people in the ag community and with long experience to be fully aware and understand the risks and the problems associated with those issues. So you know, I won't repeat what's been said before, but I certainly do agree that I'm glad we had the chance to hear from you directly and understand some of the staff report necessarily has to summarize a great deal of information in detail. So we were able to hear a little bit more and help us understand how these conditions may have occurred, and especially the spill. You know, I do have a better picture of that particular day, but like Mr. Briggs, I also wonder, with standing water, with late rainy seasons, over that long period of time, that you might not have had other spills that occurred that you weren't aware of, just because of the conditions and the configuration and just the existing situation. I also feel that it's very important to us to have the ag community recognize that we are very serious about, as Mr. Briggs noted, self-reporting and about being fully aware and operating according to the conditions of your permit. For those reasons, I think it's really important to recognize that the economic benefit, which I would like to see the order amended, which I think is item 12, to reflect a different number, a higher number. Right now it shows a economic benefit for violation number 5 only of $1,000. So I think for the sake of the record, we need to show a different set of numbers. Going forward, we want to be sure that in the future when we have these kinds of situations that occur, we need to understand what the delayed costs are and what the avoided costs are, because I think that is helpful to dischargers to understand what are the different elements that are going to be considered. We don't want to minimize it to the point of saying, well, it's just the cost of reporting, and it's $1,000 over 6 or 7 or 8 years. That seems really, really low to me. But I would like to see the higher penalty of $120,000 as a compromise. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Well, we do have a motion, second. So why not, we'll call for the vote.
And the motion is to adopt the order as proposed with the two word changes.
Yeah, by the prosecution team, their recommendation. Okay, all those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
All those, and we have Mr. Hayashi.
I think we should just do a voice vote,
okay,
or a roll call vote. I'm sorry.
Okay. Ms. Hewitt, would you take a roll call?
Okay. Before you do that, maybe I'm out of order here, but can the maker of the motion accept a friendly to amend the economic benefit as Dr. Hunter suggested?
Just that one figure? Not the penalty, right?
Right.
And what would we amend it to, though? I don't see a point of making a change there. I mean, what number are you going to put in there?
Okay.
I would go with the number that Mr. Briggs calculated for us.
I had two figures. I had the $24,000 based on the $1.1 million for a little less than a half a year, and then there was the $14,000 staff cost that was in the staff report. So that's a total of $38,000.
For 2 years.
It doesn't change the penalty amount.
Okay.
And if we're redrafting the findings on the economic benefit in terms of the $14,000 that staff calculated, the first amount was $3,000, and that was for the late report, and that was the expense of putting together the report, addressing whether there were any changes. They did some of that in what they subsequently submitted, so I'm not sure if the $3,000 that may be a little inflated, but at least it's a conservative assumption. The $10,000 was the time to request and negotiate a permit, which they did because they obtained coverage under the general permit. So I don't think that that's an avoided cost. And the repair, we can leave that in there. So I think it would be the time value of money, the savings in doing the upgrades, and $4,000.
So that would be $28,000.
Okay, and do you accept that as a friendly amendment to your motion, Mr. Hayashi?
What do I get for an exchange?
You know, benefit.
I'm not opposed to that. I'll take that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Anything else, Lori, that you need to address in terms of what?
Herbie wants to say something.
Okay. I just like Lori or someone to point out exactly what we're amending in the order.
Paragraph 12 would say the discharger likely realized $28,000 of economic benefit from, it wouldn't be from violation number 5, it would be from all of the violations. Calculated as follows: a conservative estimate in the delayed cost of upgrading the facility and acquiring additional disposal fields, $24,000, which is a conservative estimate, semicolon, $1,000. I need to refer back to the staff report.
Well, if we're going to keep going, I got some other changes to make. No.
$1,000 for, I'm sorry, $3,000 for the expense of putting together the missing report and $1,000 for the repair of the water reel system.
Just for a point of clarification, where Monica made the comment that the spray fields were not, you know, when they quadrupled the size of the production, the spray field was not quadrupled. It probably didn't need to be at that point because initially I think the spray field had more capacity than the 77,000 gallons a day that they were supposed to be putting out. So therefore it wouldn't need to be go out by the same amount of the growth.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to just.
All right. Yeah. Anything else in this amendment? Lori, that's it? Okay. Ms. Hewitt, you want to continue?
Okay. Monica Hunter?
Start over.
Well, okay.
Okay. Start over with the roll call. I don't know if you had already started.
Monica Hunter?
No.
David Hodgin?
Yes.
Russell Jeffries?
No.
Jeffrey Young?
No.
Gary Shallcross?
Yes.
John Hayashi?
Yes.
Okay, so we have a tie vote.
That means the motion doesn't carry.
Okay.
So if
we can entertain another motion.
Right.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I move that we change the total amount to $120,000.
I'll second.
And keep everything else the same in terms of the amendments?
Right. Does that mean that the amount over the $95,000 goes to the state revolving fund?
The board has to determine that, whether it's going to increase the amount of the SEP.
I'd rather increase the
cleanup
amount of
and abatement account.
Is there a percentage that we can give the SEP, or a certain amount? Does a certain amount have to go to the revolving fund?
It depends if the penalty is being assessed under 13385 or under the WDR's violations.
We say the maximum amount to the SEP.
Well, can we suggest? But,
yeah, I have to look at the statute.
Lori,
I would like to suggest that we consider the full cost of the project, which is $94,000. Does that leave the 25? Just about.
26,000.
Yeah.
We just have to make sure that's okay as far as the statute goes, right?
Oh, you're right.
So it's
50%.
What we could do is say 94,000 or the largest amount allowed by statute.
Laurie,
hang on. Yeah, I don't, it doesn't matter because they're not mandatory minimum penalties, so there's no limitation.
Okay. Well, give it all to the project.
Well, the total cost of the SEP is $94,000, $94,005.
And that includes the ponds?
That does not include storage. That just includes upgrading the disinfection process and the pipe, pump and pipe to deliver recycled water.
Okay. So
can I just have a minute to look at the discussion of the factors, because the findings in the or the order finds that the board considered the factors and then refers back to the staff report, and I want to make sure that those findings adequately capture the board's concerns about the length of the violations and the nature of the violations.
Need to take 5 minutes? We take a 5 minute.
Okay, we'll take just a quick 5 minute break.